the top of fear that it's all just a bunch of matter. Cause if you're not really here, I don't wanna be either. I wanna be next to you. Black and gold, black and gold.
Banana phone. Ring, 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 ring. Banana phone. I've got this feeling so appealing for us to get together and sing, sing. Ring, 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 ring. Banana phone. Ding, dong, ding, dong, ding, dong, ding. Banana phone. Grows in bunches. I've got my hunches. It's the best, beats the rest. Cellular, modular, interactive, modular. Ring, 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 ring. Banana phone. Ping, pong, ping, pong, ping, pong, ping. Banana phone. It's no baloney.
Hello and welcome to Radio Free Thinker on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. That was a very weird song, and I apologize to our listeners for playing it. Shut up. My name is Ethan, your free thinking historian.
This is Don, your philosopher, political science guy.
This is Rob, cognitive psychologist.
This is Daniel, a student.
And we have a special guest with us in studio, making his second appearance on Radio Free Thinker, the executive director of CFI Canada, Justin Trottier. Welcome, Justin.
Thank you. Good to be in the studio this time.
So you're on a whirlwind tour of the West Coast. You've been giving talks every day, and you gave a really interesting talk at Langara College here in Vancouver recently. So why don't you tell us a bit about that talk?
Sure. Thanks for that. Whirlwind tour may be a bit of an ambitious way to describe it, but yeah, I've given a few talks about the Center for Inquiry and the sort of modern free thought or atheist movement and why free thinkers are organizing, or why there's organized free thought, which is an interesting paradoxical phrase I like to use. And there are actually good reasons why people who have a sort of skeptical mindset or are non-believers might want to get together and form organizations and actually do some lobbying. And that's kind of been the point of some of the talks. I'm trying to recruit, I guess you could put it that way, more people to get involved, and also solidify those who are involved with some good reasons to be continuing their support for these movements. And that was the gist of the lectures that I was giving.
We should just clarify that Justin Trottier is the executive director of CFI Canada.
That's right, which means that the Center for Inquiry, which is, you know, quite international, our operations in Canada are just a few years old now, and I guess it's my job to sort of oversee them, and as part of that, to coordinate outreach across the country, and even to hire new staff, which is what we're doing now in different locations in Canada, and that's part of the reason that I'm out here as well as to visit the campuses and talk to some of the great student leaders we have.
So your talk that you gave at Langara and that you've been giving around about sort of promoting CFI, I guess you could say that, and sort of looking to interface with the local groups. I was at that talk, though, at Langara, and I don't know, it seemed to me that there was a bit of hostility towards that. Have you encountered maybe skeptical tribalism, is a good way of putting it?
Sure, I think any large-scale movement, once it reaches once it grows a certain amount, does kind of splinter, and we've seen that in the religious community, and unfortunately we've seen it in the free thought community. And I've often joked that, you know, the best thing about free thinkers is that they're free thinkers, and the worst thing is that they're free thinkers, because on the one hand, you know, it's an asset to have people that you really, you know, think for themselves and put every claim, even the ones made by their friends and their colleagues, through the harsh scrutiny of science and evidence and all that. But on the other hand, sometimes you do need to make decisions, and even though you might not have as much data as you'd like, even though information is still forthcoming, and you always want to be able to look at your assumptions and reevaluate them, at some point you do have to take action. And it's when you take action that you sometimes don't have an easy consensus, and that can lead to splintering. And obviously there are personalities that get involved, like in anything. So the Center for Inquiry, I think, is in a healthy position because we have a very broad mandate, and we do take a lot of issues. A lot of issues concern us, and when we have leaders in different places who are more keen on certain issues and less keen on others, we give them the resources to really get involved in whatever they think is important, as long as it's part of our mandate. And we try to avoid getting into these squabbles as much as we can.
Right. And so the thing with CFI, too, that I think is really beneficial is that it has a national voice, whereas some of the grassroots movements like ourselves, like Skeptics in the Pub, which are great and we love them, they can't quite get the media attention that CFI can. So how did you guys get that reputation? How did you get those contacts?
Well, it's a long process. And I've had some students ask me, you know, how to apply the success that we've had at the local and campus level. And there really is no easy solution. The problem is that it does take time. And when you have campus groups, even off-campus groups, they don't tend to last all that long, you know. And we've seen that here in Vancouver, both on and off-campus, that groups come and go. And the issue was, the reason why CFI, I think, has been successful is because we've been a more long-term force. And so we've able to really you know, groom relationships with key media people and to just send out press release after press release. Many of them don't get picked up. Some of them get picked up by local press. And then before you know it, that's picked up by more national press. But if you're not in a place for long enough, you can't really build a movement. And by just being persistent over time, we've managed to do that. Now we're hiring staff in different locations and building centers in various cities, as I mentioned. And now we can use the reputation we've acquired nationally to make success happen through those local groups, alongside those local groups in those key places.
Excellent. So then, dealing with sort of the local groups, have you noticed, though, that it's sometimes difficult to work, say, with a group that's maybe sort of scientifically, skeptically motivated versus a group that's sort of motivated through atheism or atheist activism? Do you guys find a conflict there?
You know, we work with a lot of campus groups mostly, and they all pick different names. We've had skeptic groups and free thought groups and groups with long names like, I think, at the University of Waterloo in Ontario, for example, they're called the Atheist Agnostics and Freethinkers, and groups whose names are so long that I forget them sometimes. I don't find, to be honest, that there's much of a difference in terms of what the group calls itself. At the end of the day, you know, it comes down to leadership and personalities, and some people just are more interested in being just local, and some people, some leaders want their group to be more connected. And we try to encourage the latter. We do want to have a more national network. We think it has its benefits. The bus campaign, for example, we were involved in the big atheist bus campaign. And we put that slogan on buses in various cities, not here, but in Calgary and in Ottawa and Toronto and others. And that was helped by the fact that we had this network of local groups, because wherever the media showed interest, and it was all over the place, even in Vancouver, where it didn't run, we did have those local connections that could act as spokespeople, that could speak at public meetings about the bus campaign. So we think there's a lot of good reasons to build this movement, and I guess we're just looking for more people to come to realize those benefits.
I'm sorry, I was checking out your website, and actually I noticed there was a not a lot of information on there about some of your campaigns. There are some things where you had some things you were proud of. For example, the work you've done in Ontario with regards to public funding for religious schools and
right.
All that. But again, you've mentioned that you've done a lot of support, but, you know, besides the buses, what have you done recently?
Are you looking at our... the sites are a bit messy these days. And
We've been there.
yeah, we've all been there. So we are working to improve our local websites. A mess would be the wrong word. They're just non-existent. The skeleton is there, but nobody's really put any meat on it. So that's the case for the Vancouver website. So, you know, wait a few weeks, dear listeners, and then maybe visit it again. But the Center for Inquiry now has a Canadian site, a national homepage, and so that's what we're really building up, cficanada.ca. It's also kind of in a state of flux, but this one will be built in the next few weeks. It will actually host a blog. We're launching a CFI Canada blog, so just Canadian bloggers from all stripes. Not all of them necessarily atheists or even free thinkers. I'm sure they all call themselves that, but everybody kind of has a different definition of that word. But anyways, they're going to be from all over the place, lots of different issues. So definitely plug into that, again, cficanada.ca, in the next few weeks or so. What have we done recently? Well, hard to pin that down. There's so much going on. Our bread and butter is really our educational programming. We're an educational charity, so we do a lot of debates and lectures and panel discussions. That's really what we're all about. In and around Ontario, we've done lots of them. I mean, just before I flew out here, the 2 days earlier, we had a debate on the meaning of time. We had leading philosophers, cosmologists, physicists, and we drew 900 people to that, which was, and the speakers were pretty impressed with that attendance, and everybody seemed to have a good time. So that's really what we're all about, is engaging the public on those sorts of issues. And we've done things like that, maybe smaller scale, in different places, Alberta, Vancouver, of course. And then we do a lot of political advocacy, as you mentioned. So we're involved in the public funding of religion, and religious schools is a big issue. We've created networks of groups, religious and non-religious, but all secular groups, to oppose that. We had a lot of press attention for that. Recently, we were on CBC, actually, just last weekend, on a show called Test the Nation, which was aired nationally, and it was an IQ show, which, if you saw it, there were six teams, and actually one of the teams was atheists. CBC actually thought enough of non-believers to actually make a team of atheists, so there were 30 atheists as one of the team. There's also religious believers, who's another team, politicians. Anyways, it was a big thing. And
You came in third?
That's right. We were right in the middle there. Not showing off, but doing respectable. But our team actually produced the single highest IQ. We had our guy, actually one of my friends from Halifax, who's involved with CFI Halifax work. He's getting a big screen TV, courtesy of CBC. That was a great opportunity, not for the IQ test. I mean, that was secondary. It was just the networking. I mean, we met some amazing people, and these were some of the real VIPs of Canada that were there, and we got to really put on a good face for atheism. And actually, we plugged CFI on the air in front of over a million viewers. So, we have quite a bit of clout, and the educational work, the services that we provide, very social services, and we have a very vibrant set of multimedia as well. We have a very dynamic YouTube channel, so if you're not getting to all of our events, and of course many people in Vancouver might not be, then you can always watch them there. So it's just a way to share that content.
I noticed that a lot of the events, especially the medical ones, which I admit I know I seem to see more, a lot of them are you have to pay to go see them. And you have a paid position, and you're here hiring a paid position.
Yeah.
Where does the money come from? You're not in with Big Pharma or anything.
They heard that on the air. No, of course we're not. And we are a nonprofit and a charity. So, as all nonprofits are, we're kind of always strapped for cash and just continually fundraising all the time. We do have a membership program. We do encourage people to join that. That's a small source of funding for us. And then donations and publications that we're involved with as well make some money. And some of the events, as you said, do have an admission cost, although not all of them. There are lots of social and discussion groups that are free in different places across Canada. But it's going to be interesting, I mean, the next few years, to be honest, to see our ability to muster the financial resources we'd require to really advance this. We had a very good year-end in 2009, and we raised quite a bit of money. We just became a charity, by the way, just a few months ago, and the first thing we did was we launched a fundraising campaign, and we got enough money at least to hire a few part-time staff in different locations. And the goal is to make those sustainable positions and then to grow and maybe even set up more offices outside of Toronto. That's what we'd like to do, and starting here.
Getting back to sort of some of the events you guys have been having, one event that really caught my eye, because it happens to be a sort of personal interest to me, is some of the sort of the more cultural-themed events. You guys recently talked about the monarchy in Canada, mm-hmm. which is, I guess, to me, I mean, like, I think about that because I'm a historian, but maybe skeptics might think that's kind of off the map a little bit. So what, motivated you guys to talk about that?
That was an interesting one, because I really thought when I pitched it that it would be a no-brainer, that everybody would just kind of agree it was, an issue, maybe not the most important one, but something we should have a policy on. But it didn't really work out that way, and we weren't able to really build a consensus one way or the other, so we kind of decided not to have an official policy, but to discuss it in this cafe inquiry is what we call discussion series that we have on lots of controversial issues. I was motivated because, to me, any illegitimate form of authority is a no-no. And it seems like a person who is kind of born into their leadership position is, I guess, as a leader, I like to think I earn my position, and I think that any leader should have the merit to establish themselves in it. And I mean, the financial waste is exorbitant. The amount of money that we spend on flying in and then accommodating the royal family whenever they visit is just a tremendous waste, as far as I'm concerned. And in general, I mean, you know, the one area where I think it does touch on with CFI is the fact that the head of the monarch of England, who's also, of course, the monarch of Canada, is also the head of the Anglican Church. And so essentially our head of state could never be a non-Anglican.
Yeah.
And if you look at it that way, I think it's definitely a church-state issue as well.
Excellent. Well, let's take a commercial break, and we'll be back with more with Justin Trottier on Radio Free Thinker.
Then there's the utter misery that is college radio, where they apparently just let any bewildered freshman wander into the booth and try to run a radio station. Campus Outreach is looking for... Hang on. College radio can pretty much be summed up in five words.
CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
LiveVan.com is Vancouver's most reputable community-driven concert calendar. New shows are listed daily by the city's most prominent promoters, but also by you. The musicians and fans were the driving force of our local music scene. LiveVan.com's listings are different because they're personalized. They're integrated with local music directories that are constantly updated by the bands, musicians, and businesses who refer to them as they pick locations and lineups for their newest upcoming shows. And no one's barred from contributing, since we all know fans know more about the players than anyone. So visit livemusicvancouver.com for the latest major and independent event listings. And while you're at it, check out our archives and discover how closely we all work together in this community, putting on the shows you love.
Hello, and we're back. So we've got Justin Trottier here in from CFI Canada, and I was noticing again on your website that one of the things that was prominent was this campaign for freedom. And I know the idea of free speech, especially when it comes to things like hate crimes and religious intolerance and that type of thing, is kind of a quagmire. What was your group's response to it and advocacy of it?
Well, the Campaign for Free Expression, which late 2009 was turned into a Center for Inquiry priority, it was turned into an international campaign that actually started in Canada about a year ago, and we launched the same thing, the Campaign for Free Expression. And the reason was a number of things on lots of levels. Locally, we had books that were being banned by various Catholic school boards in Toronto at the time. For example, The Golden Compass, which supposedly promoted atheism. The author was an atheist. It's a children's book, a fantasy book, and it turned into a movie, of course. And so that was banned, and we thought that was ridiculous. Of course, these are publicly funded Catholic schools, so you're essentially telling atheists who are funding the school that their sort of worldview is not welcome. Obviously, we had a problem with that. But on the provincial level, as you may know, various human rights commissions and those sorts of institutions were at that time also looking to censor various publishers for offensive things that they were publishing. And the big example is the Mohammed cartoons, where the publisher of the publication that actually produced them in Canada, the Western Standard, was actually essentially bankrupted by having to defend himself at the Alberta Human Rights Commission and Citizenship Commission, whatever it's called. So there, that was happening. And we looked across Canada and we saw that the United Nations every year has been forced to essentially erode the power they have a director called the Special Rapporteur on Free Speech, and he's supposed to monitor abuses of free speech around the world. And his mandate every year gets changed a little bit so that it's kind of eroded from its original emphasis on free speech to a new emphasis on looking for abuses of free speech that essentially criticize religion. So if somebody's criticizing religion, it's no longer seen as protected. It's now potentially an abuse of free speech, which can be, well, I'm not sure how exactly they'd stop it, but the UN is essentially dictating to countries that a free speech policy, which we think is just completely backwards. So there were all these things happening at the time, and a lot of those issues are still very much alive. And that's what prompted us to launch this. Of course, people should be free to practice their religion without threats of violence. But none of this was violence. This was simply criticism. This was simply sarcasm, simply what we feel is protected religious dialogue. And one of the things that makes Canada great is its protection for that value. So, you know, to us, this was important enough to have a major campaign over. And that's why we decided to launch this campaign for free speech. And it was seen as important enough that it became international. And now there's this Blasphemy Day, which is a yearly, well, we hope it's going to be a yearly project of CFI.
Does CFI have specific, I was reading about Professor Moore and his recommendations for altering the Canadian Charter of Laws with regards to hate crime.
That's right.
Your group supports the idea of hate crimes or not?
Yeah, in a certain sense. We support Professor Moore in his recommendation that the Human Rights Act be amended so that only incitement to violence is considered grounds for censorship, rather than the way it's worded right now, where anything that's deemed overly offensive actually could be grounds for censorship. The criminal code actually prohibits hate crime as a criminal offense. So Moore's point was you already have the criminal code, you don't also need to have it in human rights legislation. We agree with that. We think when it comes to human rights legislation, that free speech is the human right that needs protection more than the religious sensibilities, that those are already well protected in the existing criminal code. So we definitely support Moore's the direction Moore wants to go, and we've said that in lots of our speeches.
A minor, perhaps pedantic point, but isn't part of the point of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms and that is to protect things that can be, like the criminal code can be edited, and protection against hate crimes can be removed anytime.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's enshrined in the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, so there is, I mean, you could see a case be made that some form of hate crime protection could be enshrined in the Charter of Rights.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm personally convinced with the necessity for hate crime legislation as such. I mean, I think crime is crime, and I'm not sure that, you know, the fact that it was that it had that motivation necessarily means it should be treated any worse. In a sense, you're privileging a form of crime when the act itself is no different. That's maybe a controversial view, but I feel like if somebody gets punched in the face, it really doesn't matter if it was motivated by the fact that person was Muslim or just the fact that you didn't like how they looked. It's a punch in the face, and the fact that somebody's Muslim, I don't think that should mean that their crime is worse than the fact that the person wasn't Muslim. I mean, a punch is a punch. But I understand that that's, for some reason, controversial, that view of equality. So the CFI position is not necessarily that human rights legislation shouldn't have anything to say about hate crime, but certainly it shouldn't go as far as it does currently, and it goes as far as actually censoring people for being offensive or sarcastic and stuff like that. I mean, that's how it has been used and abused in the by Human Rights Commission. So that is something we want to see modified. And if there's a shell of left that is still a form of censorship, I could live with that. But it definitely needs to be watered down substantially so that human rights commissions, which are not, they're not judges. These are really just activists who run these. They should not have the powers that they currently do to censor offensive things.
A side note, too. The CFI or yourself, we had this debate before, skeptic view versus libertarian view. And your view sounds very libertarian. Is that how you would classify yourself?
Not really. I mean, I have those sensitivities, I guess. But it's complicated. I don't know if we have time to get into it, but there are lots of ways where I'm not a libertarian, especially when it comes to protecting children. Libertarians tend to think that they own children, and I think that children need the same level of protection as adults, and sometimes that means protecting children at the expense of supposedly parental rights. So that's where I do come to odds with a lot of libertarian positions, among others, so I wouldn't call myself that. But maybe on this issue, you know, about human rights law, I'm not sure. I don't have a degree in political philosophy, but maybe I'd be a libertarian there.
In the sense that anyone can easily be classified into any political affiliation.
Yeah, I mean, like you probably would say that CFI is not a libertarian organization.
No, not at all. I mean, CFI, you're asking me these questions off the cuff, so I'm just telling you my personal answers, but I should be strictly acknowledge that CFI does not have any partisan ideology politically, nor is it libertarian or socialist or anything like that, and its members are extremely diverse, especially, and its staff is also just as diverse, so it makes it fun working there, actually.
Well, Justin, I know time's running down and you got to get running, but suppose somebody heard this interview and loves the idea of CFI and wants to help. How can they go about doing that?
Yeah, well, I guess the best way is to visit our website. Some of them are more active than others, but they all have contact information. So if you go to cficanada.ca, you'll see email addresses and phone numbers, and you can get involved there. If you're local in Vancouver, look up the CFI Vancouver groups. There's a meetup group called Skeptics in the Pub, which is associated with us. If you're interested in getting together socially to talk about skepticism, there's a lecture series we put on that you can. It's public. Everybody's invited to attend. There are campus groups. If you're at UBC or SFU or the University of the Fraser Valley, I know we have groups at those campuses. But if you're at another campus, help us start a group. Contact me. My email address is justin.trottier, last name, T-R-O-T-T-I-E-R, @gmail.com, and I can point you in whatever direction you want to be pointed in.
Excellent. Well, why don't we go to a break? Justin will be leaving us now to do another one of his fantastic lectures somewhere in BC, somewhere. And stay tuned for more Radio Free Thinker.
Tuesday, February 23rd, beginning at sunset in Montreal, broadcasting live on your local campus and community radio station.
Sometimes we get that instant homelessness. We didn't expect to be homeless, and we find ourselves on the street because of an eviction or a notice.
Canada's largest talk show on poverty and homelessness.
We have a mayor who compared poor people to pigeons publicly and said that if you stop feeding them, they'll go away.
The 8th Annual Homelessness Marathon, broadcasting February 23rd to 24th. A 14-hour live radio show from frozen street corners across Canada. Call in live, join the discussion.
Our demand from the federal government is $2 billion a year for social housing units across Canada. That'll just help us to start catching up to the 15 years that we've lost in building social housing in this country. It's really a glaring example of the negligence of the government.
Visit www.ckut.ca for more info.
The Homelessness Marathon will be broadcasting live from Vancouver on Tuesday, February 23rd at 8 p.m. as CITR 101.9 FM partners with CJSF 90.1 FM and Co-op 102.7 FM to bring you an hour of interviews and stories of how the 2010 Olympics are affecting homelessness in Vancouver. Visit CITR.ca for more information.
And welcome back to Radio Free Thinker. So we opened the show with a song about phones. So now let's close the show with a story about phones.
Yes, it's a story that is pretty topical because BC is now upholding the handheld cell phone ban while driving that was put into effect at the beginning of January.
And today's the first day they're giving out actual tickets.
Yes.
Second day.
There was a grace period in January where they were just giving people warnings, but now they're actually going to give you a $167 fine and up to 3 points on your license.
So does this include hands-free phones and texting? Because you know, when you're driving the car, you got some people who have the phone up to their ear, you have some people who have the hands-free thing, and some people who text. Does this cover all those?
This does not cover hands-free phones. You can still have your Bluetooth headset connected to your car if you happen to be rich or something like that. But you cannot
Bluetooth
have...
Bluetooth headsets are cheap.
To connect them to your car...
Oh, for your phone.
But,
Rob is, like, blocking
I'm leaning in front of Dawn. This is something that has happened in previous
shows. This is our way of controlling him.
But no, it does not. It does not cover hands-free sets, just the handheld ones that you're holding while you're driving. Now, this is supposed to prevent accidents because driving while holding your cell phone and talking in it and yammering in your ear is unsafe and supposedly causes more accidents. Well, the Highway Loss Data Institute, which is an insurance claims research company in the States, did a large-scale study where they compared collision claims per 100 vehicles in areas where cell phones, handheld cell phones, were in full ban. D.C., California, Connecticut, and New York. And they did other studies independently confirmed that there was a decrease in the use of handhelds and a subsequent increase in the use of hands-free phones. They compared the claims in these states to the surrounding states, which were grouped to control for economics, miles driven, even seasonal effects. And the result, which is incredibly convincing, and you can look this up on their website. I found it via Ars Technica. No significant differences.
But isn't that there's a confounding factor here, right? I mean, we did research for this, and the research I saw is it doesn't matter how you're talking on the phone. The idea is if you're distracted. So BC's law in itself doesn't get at the problem of being distracted by it. And then the second thing is the whole idea of enforcement of these laws. In a lot of the states that you mentioned, enforcement is very lax, and others, it's very strict.
Well, when they did look at it, I think it, they found that for all the states they did, the noticed handheld usage went down by at least a half, if I remember correctly. So they're like, it's not simply off the laws itself. They also like looked at actual evidence to see whether people were actually getting off their phones. But they found that a lot of them were going to hands-free, which...
Yeah, and the point of this whole story was that the government listened partially to science, where lots of research was saying that, look, having someone yammering in your ear while you're driving is going to split your attention. It's going to constantly shift between your driving and whatever you're listening to, and it's going to increase the risk of an accident. But people want to talk on their phones while driving, and the government was like, well, probably it's just like the holding the up to the ear that's causing the problems. They banned handhelds, didn't ban hands-free, and here we have evidence that, once again, the government has completely ignored the root cause of an issue.
It's a plot by Plantronics and all the head-free handset companies out there to try and steal money away from the poor people and give it to those rich fat cats in Ottawa.
I think it's just the usual foolishness of the government.
Yeah.
So we have some more stories, but unfortunately we're out of time.
That's right. So we encourage our listeners to email us at radio.freethinker@gmail.com. Check out our webpage at www.radiofreethinker.com. Well, to sign off, this is Ethan, your free-thinking historian, saying goodnight.
This is Don saying, eyes open, minds on.
This is Rob saying, if you're listening to this while driving, perhaps you should switch off the radio.
This is Daniel
saying,
if you're just listening, it's not a big deal.
Yeah, that's true.
There's actually evidence behind that. I will find it and post it on the website.
I'm well aware.
As dozens of our listeners scream off the road into a ditch.
On that happy note,
for listening.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
Big government and big pharma have entered into a secret conspiracy in which secret government contracts are sold to big pharma that allow for secret chemicals to be placed in coffee seeds, all under the watchful eye of Big Coffee, who is secretly working with other world forces, all in a sinister plot to get alien embryos in our coffee so big pharma can sell us alien contraceptive pills. Or, if you'd rather get some rational news, check out Radio Free Thinker, the radio show / podcast that promotes skepticism, critical thinking, and science education. Every Tuesdays at 4 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.